Hi, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 25. I'm Janice Cunning.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Janice, we have a guest today. My good friend from San Francisco, Jeremy Benjamin, is here. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hey, it's great. Yeah, it's great to have you with us. So let me give a little background for the audience about Jeremy. Jeremy is the Senior Director of Development at San Francisco General Hospital. He and I met in San Francisco, gosh, it's got to be over 10 years ago, Jeremy. And while I was just, it's definitely 10 years ago, maybe 12.
12.
When I was getting into fundraising and he and I shared a cubicle at San Francisco State. And one of the things I loved about Jeremy, this, I've said this to you before, Jeremy, but I want to acknowledge you because you are the one person in my life who really got me into the habit of giving and being philanthropic. And I just remember, you're so generous. And I remember we used to go out to lunch together and you would always like give your change over. And I was like watching you and I was like, wow, I can learn from this man. So thank you for being who you are and coming on the podcast and writing a wonderful blog post for the fundraising leadership community.
Well, thank you, David. And I have to share the reason I know it's 12 years is because my son was born on the day I was supposed to start at San Francisco State, and he's 12 years old. So it's easy for me to remember that particular number. And I should say, just for the record, that I'm actually the senior giving officer versus the senior development, head of development. My boss may, I don't want to upset anybody.
All right. I always think of you as bigger than life.
Oh, thank you. Right.
Well, welcome. And we're really excited, Jeremy. And just so our listeners, a little sneak peek at what's to come, we're really having an intention to have a lot more guests this year. So it's great to have, this is our first podcast of 2019, and we're kicking it off with a guest, and we'll have many more people that we can learn from throughout the year.
So, well, let's dive into your topic, which you wrote about and is now up on the Fundraising Leadership website, which is about fundraising in healthcare. And you really hit a couple of interesting points in there that I've never really thought about. The first thing was about like this idea of intimacy. We want to bring this in. So share a little bit about like the environment and how quickly the relationship can develop and what intimacy means for you.
Well, thanks, David. The when I think about intimacy, and I was writing this article, I really used that story at the beginning to kind of set the stage, which is people who are, you're talking about values, you're talking about things that matter, you're talking about things that are very personal. Mm. And when you're, then if you're in a medical setting, when someone's been, for example, in my story, recently diagnosed or just in that moment diagnosed with something like cancer, here you are stepping into a sudden relationship that you didn't have before with this person. And they have to be really, they're being real with you. They're facing their mortality. Mm. And you've met them 5 minutes ago. When you think about it in the real world, how often do you even have these deep conversations about what matters to people and what's important in life, especially if someone's facing a life or death situation potentially? Mm. So when I said instant intimacy as a challenge, because I do think as fundraisers, we get the opportunity to have these amazing conversations, but usually it's over time with donors. Medicine puts this pressure. Mm. It has to happen quickly and now. And that's a big, I think that that's something that I wanted to bring to light to people, because good fundraising should be an intimate and human experience.
Mm. I think we completely agree. And Janice, do you remember like in our leadership program, how we defined intimacy? Do you recall
into
that?
Into me, see.
Into me, see.
That's wonderful. I hadn't heard that. That's great.
Yeah.
And what do you think, Jeremy, you know, if somebody's listening who might be considering going into healthcare fundraising, like you could speak about yourself and other people that you've worked with. What do you think are some of the characteristics that make a fundraiser particularly successful in that field?
You know, it's the same. I suppose I keep thinking it's the same as all other fundraising, but it really is that ability to be compassionate, the ability to empathize with the other person and really be there for them. Those are the traits, and really listen. Those are the traits that I think are good with all fundraising, but in particular medicine, it puts this extra emphasis because you can imagine standing there or sitting there in front of someone who's really dealing with something hard. And you're part of that process. You're there with them. You're like one of the, in a way, you're part of the team that's taking care of them. Mm-hmm. And so you have a responsibility. So I think if anybody's thinking about that, if things feels like, wow, that sounds exciting, I would love to be having that conversation with someone and being in the room with them, then I think it's a great thing to try. And there's, personally, I find it incredibly, have found it incredibly rewarding.
Mm. Well, what's coming up for me as you share that, Jeremy, is this contrast you made in the article around, you know, this, you know, transactional fundraising versus relationship fundraising. And I'm always reminded that, and it's helpful to remind the audience, because there's so much pressure on the transactions, right? And it's just so helpful to, and you did a great job of this in the article, to remind us that this is human to human interaction, right? And it seems to me like in your environment, it's so present.
It absolutely is present, but I'm glad that you're putting a kind of fine point on this, because to me, it was really important to mention that even in that situation, there's a transactional element that's mm-hmm. happening, which is the donor in my story called and said, I want to talk to you. That donor had an intention to give. There is a transaction that the fundraiser knows is happening. And yet, how do you then say, well, hold on a second. That's not the point of this meeting right now. It's going to happen. I need to take a step back. I need to be there for what this donor is telling me, saying to me, it wants to do and is important. But we all have that pressure to say, okay, I'm going to get in. I got the call. I'm going to get the gift. I'm going to go to the next thing and meet my goals. So yeah, I'm really advocating in medicine in particular, it's an added stress of stepping back and giving, having that human moment is super important.
Yeah, and I think I was really struck, Jeremy, you know, the part you brought in about giving being part of the healing process. And I think when I've thought about giving in terms, I've often thought about families, like maybe giving at in memorial or after, but like this, I think this is a really exciting kind of idea you're bringing in that I hadn't thought about, and probably a lot of our listeners haven't thought about. So tell us a little bit more, like, how did you come to realize this? You know, how does it inform your day-to-day work?
Oh, I wish I could say that this was like a big aha that was my thing, but it's actually, if there was one big difference between fundraising in the non-medical and fundraising in the medical, this is probably it, which is the impact of philanthropy upon the donor's health and their well-being. And there's actually been medical studies on this. I know they're embedded in the article a little bit there, but this is a for real phenomena that exists and that people in healthcare fundraising know about and really respect and keep in mind. So of course, that I'm really glad that you're saying that one, because I think that that is one of the most unique aspects of fundraising in a healthcare setting is, and I love that you said that, it's, we talk about after, but what about the impact of philanthropy on wellness, on the human, this person's ability to take action. And I tried to say that in the article, and I don't know how well I did it, but mm-hmm. you can imagine you got a diagnosis and you're sitting there and you're thinking, what do? I need to take a proactive action that shows that I am part of this healing process. This is me healing myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something. I'm going to change my life. Mm-hmm. That act of giving is a, could be core, fundamental to that, to a step in that direction.
I love what you're saying. It's the word that comes up as you were sharing that, Jeremy, is agency. Like we talk mm-hmm. about the donor having agency. Like I've been, as you probably know, I've been getting an inside view of the medical industrial complex with my father passing away last year, and you know, with many trips to the hospital, and my mom going through something similar now. And they can feel at the effect of the institutionalization of medicine. And what I love about what you're saying is philanthropy gives the patient who is thinking about making a donation agency, or you know, that control.
Exactly. And in fact, I was with you, and you said I love that term agency, and it's a patient who wants to improve, who wants to take agency in healing. Then looks to all the options that they have, and one of them is philanthropy. And they think, well, what if I gave back to support whatever work is going on in this field, whether it's cancer, heart disease, you name it. And that was one of the ways that I was able to start to take some action. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's agency, but it's agency towards healing. Just like you would change your diet and take your medication in a way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you really expressed it as a commitment, like a gift can be a commitment to healing and hope. Like that struck me so much when I read that in the article.
Oh, thank you.
And there was something else that that I loved about the article. It was like you use this term like breathing through your ears. So let's tell the audience, like, I love that, Janice, and I loved it. And so we're gonna ask you to give the audience some guidance about how to breathe, maybe something even to do in terms of breathing through their ears.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that coming up with those titles and the subtitles was really fun for me. But I really meant, you know, and of course by that title was to something that so in my journey as a professional and in the world as a human being, mindfulness and mindfulness training has actually been really useful and helpful for me. And knowing and remembering to take a breath, to step, that is actually an incredibly powerful tool to pull you out of the immediate emotions or the sense of urgency that you might feel in a moment with a donor in fundraising, or even professionally in any moment, or even just in life with your family. So when I said breathe through your ears, of course, what I meant was, if you're going to be able to listen and be present with your ears, take a breath first. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, when you're with, this is not, you don't learn this at your typical fundraising conference and how to be successful as a fundraiser. But for me, it has been invaluable. So I think as we get to the point in the conversation where we want people to go home and take some practice, this will be a key thing. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm breathing now.
Well, yeah, so you know, when you in mindfulness practice, when you breathe, you you can do this right. You know, any listener can do this. Well, hopefully, they're not driving. Is you close your eyes and you take a breath and you just say in, and then you breathe out, and you whatever thoughts are coming to you, whatever anxieties are happening, whatever moments or images are flashing in your mind. They just, you can let them say they're there, but let them float away. It's more about in and out. All that matters is the in and out. If you do that, even for 10 breaths, I know this, but I didn't put it in the article. that shows that that has the ability to relax you as well as really focus your mind.
Well, what I love about what you're suggesting here, and you're going to sort of give our audience something to practice, is that even in the pace, the speedy pace of the hospital environment, as you're running in to see the donor, you know, you can pause and breathe. And what the words that come up for me is be with, be with the donor, be with the patient, actually be there for this person who is just got a diagnosis that rocked their world.
Or, you know, in my current setting at San Francisco General Hospital, we're a trauma, Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital, we are a trauma center. So sometimes people, there's actually, you know, people don't have a great outcome and somebody may have died and you are there for them. So how do you do that? You know, you take a breath to be there for them and remember what's going on in terms of their humanity and what's important. And yet still remember that you're a fundraiser and you have a job to do. And that's your role in this world and that's in this role that you're playing there. So I don't want to water that piece down either. So that's the big challenge. How do you do all of those things simultaneously and still maintain yourself professionally and being successful and doing what you need to do for the organization?
Yeah, I think it's really, I love that idea, you know, that in any meeting, just taking a breath, like the way that it impacted me when I read what you wrote, Jeremy, was like that sort of opens you up to then hearing. And, you know, David and I in our we do, you know, courses around teaching essential coaching skills. And one of the things we always say is like, you want to listen to like what's not being said, the tone, you know, the pace, like sort of feel what's in the space around you. And you can't do that if you're in an anxiety state.
Yeah. When you're in an anxiety state and you're listening, I remember one time a supervisor once said to me, you listen to respond, which was not meant as a compliment. and she probably was right. Cause maybe I was in an anxiety state at that moment and dealing with whatever I was dealing with, probably professionally, to get through it. And I think that's, how do you be able to take that moment of anxiety and switch it and try to pull yourself out, even just a little bit?
Well, you're bringing up something that Janice and I are very passionate about, which stay tuned. We're gonna create something for AFP around these different ways of listening. Listening to your internal state, listening to the other person you're with, and then listening to the your intuition and the emotional field that's happening around the circumstances. So there's more to come on that, but why don't you give the audience, I think we're just about at time today. So why don't you give the audience something to practice or something to try?
Okay, and this is actually something that I do every day. When you arrive in your office in the morning, even in a cubicle setting, it's okay to do it. Turn on your computer. Close your eyes. People might look. It's okay. Take a breath and just say to yourself, breathe in. And as you breathe out, you say to yourself, breathe out. And you're going to see, oh, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to, what email am I supposed to send? What spreadsheet am I supposed to do? Try to do 10 breaths where you actually actively try to think of only one thing. Breathe in, breathe out. Nothing else. Kind of clear your mind. See if that has an impact on your day. I would say in another practice is, let's say you're going into a meeting and you want to be open-minded and you want to tap into your creativity and you want to be there for people, you know, for what's happening. Try it just before the meeting. It takes about maybe 30 seconds to do those 10 breaths, maybe 45 seconds. That's it. And I would say that was the one practice you could do. And of course, if you're in a meeting with a donor, it'd be great to do that just before as well. But I think the daily practice that somebody could try, even for just a week. And there's a lot of research, if you do some research out there, that the impact that this has on people is pretty profound. Even in schools, they try it with middle schoolers. Mm. I know because my son is one of those kids, and it has pretty profound impact.
Mm.
Great.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy Benjamin from San Francisco General Hospital, inviting the audience to establish the practice of taking 10 breaths. And if you choose to do that, you can communicate with Jeremy through the blog post that he wrote. He will respond. He's already doing it.
Try.
All right. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeremy, for your passion and commitment and your giving your time to us for our readers and our listeners. We really appreciate it. So remember to take those breaths and go put it into practice.
Bye. All right.